Grabb-serie med Anton Bjuvald, Anders Lundgren och Fredrik Kaplan.
Okay, hello everybody. My name is, as usual, Anders Lundgren, and you're listening to a little thought bubble special. I have the great honor of sitting here with Duncan Figredo. Hi, Duncan.
Hey, hi. How are you doing?
Hi, good. And Lawrence Campbell.
Hello there.
Yeah, and this was my first thought bubble, but you've this was not your first rodeo, I know. So, but what did you think of the festival weekend?
From my point of view, it was good. I had a very busy time, met a lot of good folks, actually managed to see some of the other guests, which is something I rarely managed to do. So, you know, it was good. Good for business, good to meet fans, really nice to have feedback. There's a nice generally, you know, a good buzz. So, yeah, it's been good. It's nice to come out feeling really positive about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same, really. It's about my third one. And it's always... I kind of look forward to this con more than many of the others that I go to.
I've actually done a lot of these.
Have you?
Yeah. I went to the very first one 10 years ago.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a very small affair, just in one room. And there were some other things in, like, the art gallery. I remember doing an interview there with Peter Doherty. And I tend to come back here if I can, because I was at college here.
Right.
Yeah, so I did my degree here, and it's where I first started drawing comics as well. So it's nice.
Yeah, brilliant. And it's been a pretty huge, many leaps and bounds since that first thought bubble 10 years ago, because now it feels like, one of the biggest comics events in England, right?
Yeah, it's changed shape quite a lot. I mean, from in the early event, it was a very singular thing, but very quickly... It gained a lot of attention because it became part of the film festival initially. So there's the big film festival they had every year, and they would dovetail it with the comic convention. And that was nice because there was a nice crossover thing, but it's not like the San Diego thing where it's a comic convention, but it's really all movies with comics in it. They were genuinely two separate things, but with a natural crossover.
Okay.
But yeah, it's grown. I've always had a really healthy indie scene here. For the longest time, the indie scene probably made the professional scene look a lot more... look kind of crappy, actually, because the indie scene, those guys were really good about setting up, they'd set out their tables, their stalls, they had their banners, and, you know, they put a really good display on.
Yeah, they brought something fresh to it, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's like, I remember going around there and thinking, there's a real buzz here, kind of, like, in the indie scene, and it's kind of, you feel like you can pick stuff up from there.
Yeah.
It's exciting and fresh.
If you manage to get up off your table
exactly.
Actually do that.
Yeah.
But they've kind of probably made the pros look better, or made us make more effort, because it's like, you know, you guys look great. We need to up our game. I've still never honestly managed it. My table always ends up a mess because I'm like a chaos sphere.
that rings very true, because I feel like, the major companies have a... They're represented here by their creators, but they're not really invested in the festival in the same way as the people who are just starting out. And they're doing everything themselves, from the banners to the tablecloth and everything. And it's true what you say, that, and I like that mix, because everybody lifts, you know...
It's healthy.
Yeah, it lifts each other up.
Yeah.
You've got a kind of, like, one person who's been, I don't know, mainstream, like, on a big mainstream book, and then five steps away you've got a person who's doing their first comic, and I quite like that, you know, like it kind of throws it in the mix kind
there's
of
no there's no like no separation between no. pros and sign people, and that's a really good mix.
I think it looks good for everybody, really. It does. I think it softens the edges in a way. I don't know, everybody's approachable.
And I think there's quite a strong kind of art sensibility to it as well, don't you think?
They
try to get people that are kind of artistically interested as well in lots of different styles as well, and that works really well.
It's not just all superheroes,
that's
good.
Going back, since everybody has to start somewhere, and for you guys, was it always comics, or were you dabbling in other art forms before you settled into this? This is your vocation?
I read comics as a kid and wanted to draw them as a kid, but only rediscovered them, oddly enough. I kind of went into a lull and rediscovered the game while I was at college. So it's while I was here in Leeds. And the local comic shop then was Odyssey 7. And I think it's... I know what it was, actually. It's my... In the second year, at the end of my second year, I had to decide what my final year's work was going to be. Actually, it's even before that. What am I saying? I was kind of toying with doing comics during my second year. And I think a friend reintroduced me to comics again, thinking, with things like Warrior and The Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns. And I did my first convention. And it kind of, yeah, it just reignited the interest I'd had as a child. So it all kind of, it just kind of all came back to me. So yeah, it was kind of a natural fit. And it was that time when comics were definitely on the climb again.
Yeah,
there was a real resurgence, and it seemed like things were possible. You know, so yeah, it was good.
For me, I've always been into comics, but for some reason, I always saw it as like, I don't know, like it sounds ridiculous, really, but being like an astronaut is like something that other people do.
No, I get that completely,
and not me, as it were.
When I was a kid, it was very much like I remember seeing, yeah, I understood that people drew them, but where were they? How do you get there? And I think it's one of those things, if you live near a company, it's like if you're in London, you can see, you understand, you see the address in like 2008, you can see that's where they make it.
If
you're in New York, you can see that's where DC is, that's where Marvel is, because we're talking before the internet. It's not like
no
those
way of finding
those borders have been, you know, diminished. It's harder because there's more people trying to get in now, but you can see that it's accessible. I had the same thing. I wanted to do movies, or had a sense of it, but how did you do that? Kind of back then.
Yeah.
It's so, these things make a difference.
And I think
that's one major contribution of this type of festival, that the people who are into comics but have just been readers, they see that it's possible, you know. Just got to put in the effort and do the work. Yeah. It's not like, like you say, when you're a kid reading comics, it's like they're coming down like manna from heaven. Right?
And
who makes it? They've just created some place else. But
That's
you don't see the ink stains and the sweat and toil behind it, really.
For me, kind of one of the biggest eye-openers was when I saw like a piece of original art, and I saw patches on there and whiteout.
Oh yeah,
and
It wasn't perfect.
It wasn't as the printed page was.
Yeah,
it was
like,
wow, you can make mistakes.
Yeah, it was again. It made it more attainable. Yeah. You could see the artist's hand. You could see choices made, mistakes made, rectified, and you understood it didn't matter. So it was something again that made it that little bit nearer. But yeah, going to your first convention and seeing actual artists and them being accessible to you, talking to you, that makes a huge difference. It becomes something like,
It was going to you. They used to have these comic conventions in London called UKAC.
Yeah.
And first of all, I went there as a fan, but it was very quickly, while I was going around them, I was thinking to myself, maybe I can do this. Maybe I could get a folio together and show my work.
Yeah, I showed stuff around the first time I went.
Did
actually,
you?
Straight in. But it was like the work I was doing for my final year.
Right.
I just started my final year project.
Yeah.
This Paradise Lost stuff that I was doing, which is like robots in hell, basically.
Okay.
So I would show it to anybody who looked at it. I remember showing it to people like Brendan McCarthy and Bill Sienkiewicz. Did I show it to Bill Sienkiewicz? I think I might have showed it to him at a sign-in or something. I can't remember.
I was at that one.
It was 86. Yeah. Was it 87?
It was 87.
It was 87. Wow. Yeah, you had Frank Miller there and Alan Moore.
Yep.
And everybody was accessible.
Yeah, They were. Yeah, you could go up to them.
And it was great. And they all gave you time.
Yeah.
Which is the thing you do now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You get artists approaching you, and you're happy to give back to them because those guys did the same for us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it does help.
But you lie to them in case they get too good too fast.
There's still a bit of competition going there. But
absolutely.
I'm too honest usually.
So
don't do it. It's hard work. It's miserable. Don't do it.
Okay. Yeah, we heard about Duncan's Paradise Lost, but what was the first your projects when you started?
I was working in graphic design.
Yeah.
And I thought myself, I'm going to have a go at drawing comics. And rather than going the straightforward way and thought, I'll get go and get a Judge Dredd script, I thought to myself, I'm going to draw a comic. And I found a writer, and he wrote this 36-page comic, and I thought, that's it, I'm going to draw, ink, letter this. And I, I'd done it, and I very quickly realised, fuck me, this is hard work. It's hard work, kind of thing.
Yeah. No, that's the right language.
Okay, yeah.
No, that's great. I wish I'd done that. I was working with another writer. I never got around to drawing that much stuff.
Right.
And I really wish I had.
Yeah.
2020 hindsight.
Yeah, exactly.
So make more of those mistakes that no one will ever see.
So I'd done this. Then I thought to myself, this was around about the time of Crisis and things like that. So I thought, I'll take this around and try to get it. Vertigo was just starting out, and I thought I'd try and get this published. Got rejections of letters galore. In the UK, couldn't find anywhere to publish it. So I just sent it on spec to a small company in America called Caliber Comics.
Okay,
and they printed it. Didn't make any money, but it was that
big. It got you out
the
there.
Yeah.
But the important thing is to get the stuff out there, because somebody picks it up and sees it.
And it was like that kind of cliche, really, where that thing led on to another thing.
Yeah.
That led me to...
It's only a cliche because it's true.
It's true. Yeah, exactly. And it kind of built up from that, from publisher to publisher.
Yeah.
Sorry, Anton, jumping out. Just wanted a question. Do you have anything that you've done that you feel more people should read, that you've done that doesn't really haven't ended up in the limelight? Do you have any hidden gems from your early years that people should... Or maybe even funnier, something you really don't want people to find?
Plenty of stuff I'm embarrassed about, but people will find it if they really want to anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to list it.
Well, you grow up, like you're learning as you go.
Yeah, yeah. You're learning in public, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Growing up in public, it's a painful way, right? Yeah.
I have a weird thing with so one of my earliest successes really was Enigma. Mm. And it's great because I was working with Pete Milligan and I was always a fan, but it's like the first black and white comics work I'd done, because before that I'd painted Kid Eternity, and that was a whole other story altogether.
I loved that. You know I really loved that.
I wanted to be Bill Sienkiewicz or Dave McKean or George Pratt.
It
changed on a daily basis.
It's great.
But Enigma was a weird one, because it's such a fantastic story, and I felt like I can remember being really disappointed when I... Even though I was drawing it, when I first saw the colour, I was expecting it to look like something else. Here's the stupid thing. Sherilyn Van Valkenburgh coloured it, and I'd been looking at her work a lot, but it's because of the work that she did on Mike Mignola's Fafford and the Grey Mouser. Right. And a stupid thing in my head, for some reason I was expecting to see it coloured, and somehow it was going to look like...
like that. Like
okay. It's insane.
No. I have that
beautiful
as well.
Transformation, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was a shock. So I have real mixed feelings about Enigma, which is why the artwork changed so much through the 8 issues. And it kind of fit with the story as well. But
it's about transformation.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. It was my transformation as much as anything else. It just happened to fit in with the storyline. But it kind of makes it a little inaccessible at first, I think.
I think you're being a bit harsh. I personally think it holds up now as much as it did.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm glad,
it is a classic.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm glad people like it. Yeah. I wish more people were aware of it, because it's nothing, because it's like it's one of the first Vertigo books. Mm. I mean, it wasn't a Vertigo book originally, but it turned out that way. But I think it's one of those things that I do feel is really overlooked, because of things like Sandman and Death, and you know, and people remember a lot of other books, but that one always seems to get overlooked.
Yeah.
And it's, regardless of what I did, what Pete did with the writing was so ahead of its time. It's every bit as revolutionary, I think, as something like Watchmen. Ooh, I never get this outspoken. And I think Pete deserves so much more credit for what he achieved.
It's got a lot of heart, that book. It really has.
I mean, it's regardless of how I feel about what I did. I mean, I know I put a lot of myself into it, and I know Pete felt it, you know.
But
there you go. It's been reprinted, so.
Yeah, no, and it's as it should be. And it's a cracker.
Yeah. And what about you, Lawrence? Do you have any...
I mean, my growing up is more painful, if I'm honest. I'd done some Caliber stuff, which is, if I'm honest, it's not great. I was really growing up. Then I'd done an Image book where things started coming together. and I started getting an idea of what I was doing.
Which was that?
It's called The Disciples. It lasted about 3 issues.
Okay, right, that is familiar.
Yeah, and it was meant to be published by Calibre, but Image picked it up and it went with them instead. Yeah. But this was when Image was... it's odd it came out. It was still doing, like, kind of proper spandex superheroes, and yet they had this thing that didn't quite fit in. But I grew up a lot in that one, and it was that work that got me into 2000 AD. And they offered me straight away Judge Dredd, which is, you know, like, good. Whoa, straight into John Wagner.
Not even a Future Shock.
Yeah, exactly. No Future Shock, straight into Dredd. But so I drew it, sent it in, and I was over the moon. And then I saw it printed, and they didn't tell me. They shot it from my pencils. They coloured my pencils. And they never when I drew it, they didn't tell me they were going to do that. So I presumed it was going to be inked. And they said that the pencils were so tight that they could just... And I was like... It just looked a mess.
Ouch.
Frankly.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
But it didn't deter them. They gave me more work. I grew up more during that kind of thing. To the point when I met writer Rob Williams. And we just seemed... You know, like when you find a writer that you just get on with kind of thing, and it clicks. It clicked then. And... I'd done a strip with him there called Breathing Space, which was a spin-off from Judge Dredd set on the moon.
I really remember that, yeah.
And Pete Doherty coloured it, and I was really pleased with Pete's colouring. You know, everything I felt clicked, and it was that job. When I was happy with that one, that's when Marvel came and offered me and Rob a Wolverine issue.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
After the Wolverine issue, I got offered Punisher, and they said to me...
Some lovely work there, yeah.
I'm sorry?
Some lovely work.
Yeah, thank you. And it was Punisher where I was told to ink myself. And that's when the door opened up.
Right.
I felt confident because I wasn't drawing, second-guessing who was going to ink it or trying to draw.
You're a lot more organic as a result.
Exactly. I was realising at that point I could use dry brush and...
It's not inking anymore. You're still drawing, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm drawing while I'm inking. And that was the revelation at that point. Yeah. And I've never looked back. And I've got to thank Axel for that, because it was Axel that suggested me inking myself.
Yeah, Axel Alonso, the editor,
totally.
Yeah.
So it was that moment that was fantastic.
I had a weird thing with Axel, actually. I mean, it's like I've only done very few little bits and pieces for Marvel.
Right.
And Axel gave me... It's like one of the things I really wanted to do when I was a kid. I mean, I had made my own Spider-Man costume. Clearly it was draw Spider-Man. Now, I finally get to do this. It wasn't really a dream anymore, but Axel asked me, and Pete Milligan was going to write it again. So this is the Flowers for Rhino story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's a great
story. Tangled web of Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm just about to get started on it, and I'll never forget it, because he said, so you're going to use you're going to ink it in your slick style, yeah? And I couldn't draw for 2 weeks.
Right.
What the hell's my slick style?
Exactly.
I don't have a slick style.
You just draw.
So that's it. Yeah. So you utterly question reality yourself and lose faith in yourself completely until you get to that point where you can say, fuck it, I've got to get on with it.
Yeah, but it's... I mean, as we're talking here, I hear there's... it's a very double-edged sword, this the collaborative process that is often is comics creation. But what's the... like? Yeah, there are joys and a lot of like hardships working with other people, but what do you think of the collaborative process?
I think it's that thing, like I said, if you find a writer you're in tune with. I mean, I was really happy to be working all that time with Pete Milligan.
Yeah.
Now, Pete and I didn't really have a big social relationship or anything, but he trusted me to get on with what I did and would abuse me about it afterwards, and I trusted him to write something and abused me about it afterwards. Yeah. There was enough trust on both sides. I mean, there was no micromanaging. Even at that early stage, there's not that much micromanaging from editors either. And between us, as a result, it's that thing. It's about as bar self, you know, a solo creator career. Mm. It's as pure as you can get. As long as, you know, there's not too much interruption from editorial control or anything like that. It's not like making a movie where everybody has some involvement and it's diminishing returns.
It's like what
I heard a director say, that it's like Terry Gilliam. It's like doing a painting but standing with a 50-foot brush.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have a bunch of people holding it all the way to the
canvas.
Sure,
it's diminishing returns.
Yeah. It's like, no, not that green. Yeah. the other green.
Pass Mick it Mueller. On.
Yeah.
I think you've also got to recognise that it is comics, and you have to go through a series of processes. So you, at some point, you have to kind of come at peace with yourself that you have to accept that, for example, there's deadlines, and you've got to accept the deadlines.
I never accept that there are deadlines.
And then you've got like the colorist who's gonna like change, put their style.
It's pure until you start drawing it.
Exactly.
And as soon as you start drawing it, you start compromising one way or the other.
Yeah.
Because it never matches up.
Yeah.
But there are every extra process it goes through is a little bit more chipped away.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not so many processes, and you're getting a near approximation of what it could have been.
And you know what? When it does work, it can be magic.
Yeah.
You know, like when you've got a writer who knows your strengths and writes to your strengths, when you get the colorist who kind of brings on colors that surprise you and it totally works, it's exciting.
Yeah, but every now and then it happens. You get something back and it's better than you.
Yep.
It's just better than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, it's kind of rare.
Yeah. But
But
you live for those.
Oh yeah.
Those moments. Yeah.
Totally you do. Yeah.
But. Do you have like some guys have I don't feel that you guys have it, but some guys have an Achilles heel, like something that they really abhor drawing.
Cars.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't drive.
You know,
okay. I never liked cars. I was never interested. So drawing MPH was a nightmare because there's a ton of cars in that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I had
it's
to
all
make
about
it easy on myself.
A ton of cars.
Yeah. But I kind of thank you Google SketchUp for saving me. You know, I try to make them still look organic, not like I just taking 3D models or anything. I mean, I'm still redrawing everything, obviously, but you find a way to make it work. Research sometimes can be a real hold-up. You can get stuck on those
things. I've become aware it's that careful balance of you use your research, but you've still got to be open-minded enough to also change it, move it. If the drawing of the car that you've done isn't correct in the picture, change the car, is it? Change a bit of the car so it does work.
The thing with perfect way of using reference is find your reference first and then build the story around that with that knowledge. But I always do it the stupid way of I'll lay it all out and I'll work out the way I imagine it. And you can never find anything that fits it. Never.
You know what? I do the same as you, funny enough.
It's the dumb way of doing it, isn't it?
But you know what? I think what it also does, though, is the fluid way of doing it. Because
it's
you're the slave to the reference. Rather than the other way around kind of thing. You don't want to be slave to the reference.
I think you're right. I mean, it's hard.
And it's
all hard.
That's very interesting because I feel that your work hits that sweet spot where you have a strong element of realism and plausibility in the illustrations, but you have that expressive quality to everything. So
that's good to hear, actually. I can't do what Lawrence does. You can really approach a sense of realism.
I try to.
There are pluses and minuses to
pluses
both.
That there is.
One of the things that makes that little element of cartooning is it makes when you have to do the creature stuff or anything like that a little bit easier because you can mesh it because it's not quite so real anyway, and you can play up those any of the emotional stuff more because you can be a little bit broader. I find it's like trying to strike that line between so that I would love to be able to do like things like you do or Jean-Paul Leon, but the way I naturally approach the story is simply I don't think I could make it gel.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think it's always from the other side, the grass is greener, because there's parts of me that think I don't know, if you draw like a shocked face, if you're going to do it in a realism way, it looks shocked, but at the same time, it doesn't look overly shocked, as it were. Where if you kind of, you could be more
fluid.
You
have to find different ways to make it work.
Exactly.
You've
got to find, you know, you've got to do something with the background or whatever else.
I can be more theatrical.
Exactly.
And it comes
across, but it's also natural as well.
Sometimes it borders into like amateur dramatics. That's when you know it fails, but you try to avoid that.
Yeah, it's balances on both sides on that.
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you approach faces and stuff? Do you have I talked to Brian Talbot and he has a shaving mirror right next to his drawing table, trying out different expressions
things like that.
Yeah.
I've got at the moment the way I work. I'm mostly at the moment I'm at my Cintiq, and where it is now I have I don't use it very often, but I have one of those, like a security mirror, like a convex mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know the time, yeah.
So I can act in front of that. Unfortunately, the lighting where it is not great, so I'm mostly backlit. So there's that. And I've had the same mirror from, like, a wardrobe, which I bought here in Leeds, actually, from a junk shop. So it's like, let me think, it would have been in 1990, around that time. So 26 years ago, I guess. So I still have it in my house currently, and it's still propped up in the corner of my studio. And sometimes I get up and I'll act stuff out and try things out in front of. I don't do it so much now because I hold a lot of this stuff in my head, I think.
Right, okay.
Now.
Okay. I think you said the important word there of act. So,
yeah.
You know, like if you are drawing, like, I don't know, a character like the Hulk, I do some digital photographs on myself, kind of thing, and I act
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, I've done it every now and then.
And
yeah.
I'm you know, if you look at me, I'm not the Hulk by any means, kind of thing. But there I am, I'm pretending to be. I'm
you're
like,
pretty
my hands.
Do you
and
find
like
part
that.
Of it is you just that you feel it?
Yeah, exactly.
And
I'm
you feel it, and you try and project that into.
Yeah, exactly. So when the Hulk is walking, I'm walking in as you're moving your shoulders. You kind of I want to get that weight,
and you realise you're actually doing it while you're drawing.
Yeah, that's totally it.
I have done that.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like I'm pulling faces while I'm drawing. Yeah. It's like I'm sure you've seen footage of animators working, and even if they're not looking in the mirror, you can see them sort of going.
And it's exactly that.
Making faces.
Yeah. And you're
channeling
that
it
into
and you
the
channel
thing.
It into it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to ask another question again. Do you have something that comes away in front of your work? Is there something that steals time away from you when you work that you really... What's the worst culprit?
The internet is there. It's always on, kind of thing. But
my love of Renaissance art.
So, generally, I work away, and then when I have a break... I allow myself to check my internet then. I won't go to it.
Oh, you're a good boy.
So
you
it's like when I have a cup of tea or something like that, that's when I check. I drink my tea, I do my surfing then it's back to work.
That's very good.
So that's when I try and hold that. Other than that, the stuff that I don't like doing is like reference shots and things like that. I just wish I didn't have to do them, but the way that I work, it goes that way, kind of thing.
Right.
So,
I play games. It's been 28 days. It's not been 28 days at all. It's been a couple of days, and that's just because I'm here. So, I do like my games, and I've steadfastly refused to give them up when every sensible person did so. So, and you know, I like them. I don't do that much else otherwise. Right. Watching movies or whatever.
Yeah,
but no.
I think the only reason I don't know is because I'm rubbish at them.
Hey, I'm not saying I'm any good, but. You know, Star Wars Battlefront. It's Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, when you both have made major contributions to the world of Hellboy and the BPRD. And could you tell us a bit about how that came about and how those collaborations have been?
You want me to go first?
So I talked for years to Scott Alley. Way before I had an involvement with Hellboy. excuse me. I've done various things for Dark Horse in the past before that. Lots of covers, Aliens covers and Star Wars covers and whatever. And various times I'd talked to Scott about doing stuff. He'd called me about working on something. And none of that stuff ever really happened. But the one thing... always came up would be we'd end up talking or I would end up talking about Mike's work on Hellboy, so he knew I was a huge fan. There was a point when I nearly drew a Lobster Johnson book fairly early on. That never happened. I remember meeting Mike a couple of years later in San Diego and asked him about it, and in his inimitable way he said, yeah, we thought about getting you on that and then we didn't. And that's great. That's not great.
No.
So anyway, so fast forward a whole bunch more years, whenever it was. I think it was, I want to say 2007 now. It's quite a while back.
Yeah.
Can't be that far back, can it? It is.
Yeah.
I was drawing a book for Vertigo called Faker. and I had gotten as far as I'd laid out the first issue, done layouts in the second issue, and I start all the figure work for the first issue was pretty much inked as well, in fact. And then Scott emailed me and said, have you got time to talk? Are you around? So I called him back, and I it's the weirdest thing. He just came out and asked me, like, how do you feel about drawing Hellboy? And I knew what it was. For no good reason. I just knew what he was going to ask me. I don't know, his ego or what, but it just came out of nowhere. So I kind of freaked out for a bit.
Oh yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, so he sort of laid it all out for me in a very business-like fashion. So like he said, we'd like you to either come on for, we were talking about doing like three books. We'd like you to start immediately and go and do three books. If you can't come on immediately, we'd like you to come on for the second two books. And ego stepped in immediately, and I didn't want anybody else to get in there first.
No.
So I explained my position on Faker.
Okay.
And he said, well, you should think about that. I said, I don't need to think about it.
Oh, no.
And it's like no disregard to Mike Carey, who was writing Faker. Love Mike's work, and I really wanted to work with him. But this was just one of those, this was the one book. I could have been offered X-Men or anything like that, and I wouldn't have reacted the same way whatsoever. But Hellboy was a huge fan of. So I was like, I'd already decided. Scott's still saying, think about it, don't do anything rash. I was mentally already doing rash things.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much it. I wanted to get in there straight away.
Can you remember, like, what you'd done after you put the phone down? Like, on that first kind of thing?
I went to tell Diana immediately. Yeah. It's like, my wife. And then immediately also tried drawing Hellboy.
Oh, did you?
And it was like, shit, this is bad. And actually, I did have... I mean, we were having lots of sleepless nights because we were looking to move house, and we were getting really close to our deadline to move. It was really difficult. We had to move within 6 weeks because someone was finally buying a house, boy. And we hadn't found anywhere. So... I can remember some sleepless nights, and I can remember sitting by the computer in our office and sort of semi looking at properties that my wife had emailed me to look at, and practicing drawing Hellboy on this pad of scratch paper next to, for some reason, in green felt tip pen, okay. Which did not lend itself to Hellboy in any way.
Yeah.
And apart from that, the other thing I did was I sent a bunch of other pages, stuff that I thought that Scott and Mike liked to see.
Right, okay.
I did also speak to Scott, to Mike that night, and he blew my mind by telling me what was going to happen in the story.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, this is too much fucking information.
My
head's already going boom.
But it's an epic story that you did together. So.
Sorry?
It's a really epic story that you did together.
I mean, this is the thing.
All of that at once.
That's it, and I was expecting them to be more like the sort of form of stories here had worked on, where there might be a three issue story, maybe a four issue story, maybe things of that sort of level. I wasn't expecting three books that all linked directly together and drew in the rest of the mythology. So, boom,
yeah,
all good,
yeah. Yeah, and you came on after... I mean, there had been a couple of artists before, but, I mean, Guy Davis was the one who had done the most BPRD before you, and then Tyler Crook for a while, and James Aaron.
I was exclusive with Marvel at the time.
Yeah.
And I was working on Dark Tower, and John Acudi got in touch with me via Facebook and said he'd seen Marvel Universe versus Wolverine. And he'd like the devastation that I'd drawn in it, kind of thing.
Okay.
And maybe the grimness.
Nice.
And,
good match.
And he said, I'd like to work with you, kind of thing. And I was explaining that I was exclusive and I couldn't work, kind of thing. But he said, maybe once you finish, you could do something. And I was like, I knew his work from different things, kind of thing. And I'd read some of BPRD. But if I'm honest, it was one of those things that I just thought, they ain't going to go aim. They ain't going to go anywhere near that. And we were talking backwards and forwards, and he said, what would you like to work on? And I said, I'd really like to work on BPRD. And he said, well, send me some files of some of your images, kind of thing, and would, you know, goes, it's not my thing, but just kind of see what happens. And I sent him some files, and then he got in touch with me and said, yeah. And then very quickly Scott got involved, and yeah, I was offered a three-parter kind of thing. And I think that was my trial period, if I'm honest. And I get the impression they were kind of a little bit unsure, because it was more of a realism approach than they'd ever had beforehand.
I think it's, I don't think it's necessarily, they're necessarily worried about you. I don't think it's because they'd already been through that thing when Tyler took over, and that didn't really work out the way they hoped it would.
Right, okay.
So I think it's just, I suspect it was that thing of thinking like, well, we don't want to go through this again.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know, I mean, we've talked. I mean, I know how much they appreciate what you've done.
Right, yeah, sure.
You're doing all the heavy lifting now, literally.
But I think it was like when I drew the monster pages.
Right.
And I think it was when I drew the monster pages that I think they would. I think that was the point when they were like, "Yeah, okay, we've got our man," as it were, kind of thing.
Well, you cracked it because you made it mesh with the real stuff.
Yeah,
which is hard.
I think what they wanted was to show the human side of the devastation that the monsters was creating, as it were.
Absolutely.
So I think that's where they wanted the realism to come in.
Yeah,
but it's handling both the scale and the personal moments, isn't it?
But I love the scale. That's the thing that I get quite excited about, is drawing these huge monsters kind of thing with military hardware.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I'm rubbing my knees.
Calm
down.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but it was really a departure, and a beautiful one, because I mean it really meshed.
Yeah.
Very quickly, because I was since the other artists that have worked on the Mignola books had a different quality than your work,
right?
And so it's a major contribution to widen the palette, so to speak, when you came on board. I think
I was very worried about it, if I'm honest. I know what I do, kind of thing, and I was like, you know, do I fit into this kind of group?
It's hard. It's hard acts to follow. I mean,
exactly.
You can't do what Guy Davis does with monsters, because nobody can.
No, exactly. No. He's the monster man.
But it's like you bring something else to it, you do, at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, there's no point trying to impersonate someone else. But what I would say is that I use a lot of black in my work, kind of thing. There's sensibilities of like the light, you know, the way I use light as well, you know, with the diamonds. And I think you know, I don't know what people say, and I'm not comparing myself to Mike, but Mike does the same with his his darks and the lights kind of thing.
From that point of view, you're a better match on Hellboy than I would have been.
So,
in many ways.
I don't know.
But I had to really force myself to put in all those blacks.
Right. Okay.
And I was doing that thing where I was doing the trying to be me, but trying to keep it like Mike's work as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are very much elements of Mike's work that I drew into mine. But it's that weird thing. It's like you can be using the same layouts. And I was working from Mike's layouts because he'd already drawn them previously. And I'm still like... And screwing them up for him, actually, many, many times. But I can't make things work the same way just because we have different sensibilities. And our images just... Even if I try and make it look the same, it simply doesn't read the same. It can't... I mean, it was... I mean, that's more apparent in the earlier issues, obviously. But it calmed down. I'm sort of finding a nice middle ground later on, I think.
You've got to be... Realistically, you've got to be yourself. But I think there is also very much awareness that, you know, it's these kind of Hellboy books, and the people that go in there, everybody on there knows they've got to raise their game straight away. You're very aware of that. You go, okay, I'm doing one of these books. I've got to be, you know, this is it. There's no messing around, because otherwise I'm going to be shown out as the weak link kind of thing. So you just do the best you can.
It's a sense of responsibility.
It is, and you're very aware of that.
I did have a little bit of an identity crisis at a certain point where, excuse me, where I couldn't remember what is it I do now, because I was so absorbed into that and looking at, you know, so aware of trying to make it fit in. It is the weirdest thing. The book I'm most comfortable with that I did on all those Hellboy books was the Midnight Circus one, because so there's the real world stuff, and there's stuff where he goes into the circus.
That's a beautiful,
it's a beautiful
transition.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's so amazing.
So that transition was like where I could be a little bit more myself. I think there's a lot of me in the other stuff as well, but it's a little bit more comfortable. It was.
I think you've made that your own as well. Do you know what I mean? I associate it with you, as it were.
No, cheers. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done that in the other books. Right. There's no way.
Yeah, no, but you know, with that one,
they would have had a shit fit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when you have worked now with Dave Stewart, how has that collaboration been like? Because you know that he's going to be the collar guy for most of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I just expected. Sometimes it's one of the things that I was, again, this is that thing. Probably in my mind, I'm thinking, because Dave's going to colour it, it's going to look like Mike Mignola. Okay. And oh my God, it doesn't. It's me still.
Yeah, yeah.
Crap. Yeah. But it's very interesting. I still tend to prefer it when I see his stuff on other people's work. I think probably because I could simply look at it more objectively.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it hard to judge on my own. But I mean, Dave's great. Dave does what Dave does at the end of the day. So,
yeah. You know, I'm like, it's going to sound quite cruelly, but you know, I'm working with like one of the best colorists kind of in there. Kind
yeah,
of
absolutely.
I'm working on a fantastic, what I think is a range of books kind of thing. I'm just like, you know, pinch me if I'm really honest kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you're going to get the, you know, where can I go? I can't go anywhere. Dave does it for me.
You can't be anything exactly. Grateful for it, really.
Exactly. So I'm like, I've you know, been colored before and I've like gone, oh no. I don't get that with Dave. You know, like he brings it to him.
Yeah,
I don't need things
where he does something really unique that you think I would never have seen in that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I imagine that as a dark room or something, but you brought that into it and it's like it breathes life into it.
That's totally. That's why if possible, I tried to give very little guidance when it comes to coloring.
Yeah, because like get out of his way.
It's almost because you know what you're doing. I'm just going to hinder you. I do is I'm thinking of, and then I always put it at the bottom. But you know what you're doing, so go with what you think is right.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Really. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what are you guys working on right now?
I'm working on not working.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been doing games now, right? I play some good games. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right in this moment, I'm doing some more BPRD covers. I seem to have done a whole bunch of those things. I took a little bit of time out and did some storyboarding. It was just nice to have a different experience outside of comics. It just made a good change. So I'd like to do some more of that. And sooner or later, I'll get my ass back in gear and I'll get back on another Hellboy book. But yeah. Not
beautiful.
Quite there yet.
No? Yeah.
I'm still working on BPRD. So, So
that's still hush hush, I guess, right? For the next.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away.
No, you can't at this stage.
Exactly,
no,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You have to leave it like that.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And we could go on, of course, but I think I should.
It's been good, guys.
Thank you very much.
It's been a true pleasure to speak with two giants in the field. Right?
Blimey.
Thank you so much.
Two giants walking to a field.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
Cheers.